400-verse treatise by Aryadeva, Chapter 13, The Meditations for Refuting Truly Existent Cognitive Censors and Cognitive Objects. You do not see absolutely everything about a vase, all its sensory qualities and parts, at the time when you see its form. Who would state, because the vase is perceived by their visual cognition as a reason to prove its truly existent reality? By this very same analysis, those with superior intelligence should refute fragrant odors, sweet tastes, and smooth tactile sensations as being truly existent, and establishing the true existence of physical objects by the bare sensory cognition of them, all of them, each one. Suppose that all qualities of an object were to become seen by the visual cognition that sees its form. Then, by the fact that such visual cognition does not actually see that object's odor, even if you would accept that it sees its form, how could it not become the case that it does not see the form either? This would absurdly follow, because just as if it sees one quality, it should see all of them, likewise, if it does not see one, it should not see any. It cannot be the case that you have bare sensory cognition only simply with respect to forms as truly existent whole things. Why? Because these forms have a far portion, a near portion, and a middle one, and so are only imputations on their parts. And when you analyze whether the constituent particles of a form have parts or not, these indeed become included in the category of that which has parts, and therefore they too lack truly established existence. Because of that, it's unreasonable for composite forms made up by composing particles lacking true existence to be established as truly existent whole objects of bare sensory cognition. Everything indeed becomes a section of something greater, and then again itself becomes something having sections. Because of that, even spoken syllables are merely conventions in this world and are not truly existent. If the truly existent shape of a vase were different from its truly existent color, then how could the visual cognition of the color cognitively take the shape as its object? On the other hand, if they were not different, but the same on the basis of true existence, then why, with your body in dim light, does your visual cognition of the shape not also cognitively take the color as its object too? Suppose you say that forms truly exist, because their four causal elements, earth, water, fire, and air, truly exist. Well then, except for a resultant form being visible, these causes of the form do not appear. If a form and its causal elements were truly existent like that, and truly different, a form could not arise dependently on its causal elements, they would be unrelated. And if, on the other hand, they were identical, why don't both in fact become cognitively taken by the visual cognition itself? Earth can be seen as firm, and it can also be cognitively taken as an object of tactile cognition by the body. Therefore, if the element of earth had truly established existence, you would need to say that earth can only be an object of touch and not of sight, and moreover, could not be the cause of visible forms. If it arose from its causes as something that was perceptible, there'd be no need for a vase to have any qualities such as having an inherent relation with some category, such as the universal perceptibility, in order for it to be seen, as you Vaisheshikas would claim. This is because it would already be perceptible. Therefore, if it were the case that it arose as perceptible only from having such a truly existent relation with the universal perceptibility, then it itself would be non-perceptible, and therefore could not exist as an existent phenomenon, because it couldn't be known. The cognitive sensors of the eye do not truly exist in cognized form, because if they did, such cognition of a form would arise from something unrelated to it, and thus it could likewise arise from the cognitive sensors of the ear. But what's seen by the cognitive sensors of the eye is not cognized by any other cognitive sensors. As this is difficult to comprehend, the ripening of karma is even more difficult, and was therefore said by the able sage Buddha to be beyond imagination. Because the conditions are not complete, a visual cognition cannot exist before the act of the eye sensors looking at a form. But, however, if a visual cognition truly existed after the act of looking, the cognition would be pointless, because the looking would have already ceased. As for the third alternative, namely, the looking and the cognition occurring simultaneously, if this were so, then the function of the looking to cause the cognition would become pointless. If those truly existent eye sensors were to possess the motion of traveling to their object in order to perceive it, then that which is distant would be seen after a longer time, and that which is close would be seen sooner, in which case the eye sensors see things differently and therefore cannot be truly existent. But if the eye sensors did truly exist, then why are forms that are extremely near and those at a great distance not equally clear, since both should be cognized the same? If after noticing a form, the eye sensors travel out to perceive it, there would be no advantage in their having traveled out, since they would already have seen it. Or if they travel to see an object they haven't yet seen and are unaware of, then to say, I'm definitely going to look at this object that I wish to perceive, would be a lie, because your eye sensors would always travel blind and never could find the desired object. If the truly existent eye sensors cognitively took truly existent forms without need to travel out to see them, then they would have to see all such things. Any eye sensors that do not need to travel to see cannot have any difference in their perception of objects, whether far or near, or even whether obscured or not. If the truly existent nature of all functional phenomena first appeared established in themselves, for instance in the cognitive sensors, then for what reason would the eye sensors not take as its object the eye sensors themselves? This would absurdly follow, because being truly existent as the perceiving agent, there should be nothing excluded from its range of vision, including itself. The eye sensors, being physical matter, cannot have visual consciousness of an object, while visual consciousness, in fact, cannot have the function of looking at an object, which is the function of the eye sensors. Therefore, as neither of the two, if truly existent, can have a form as its focal condition, because it could not rely on anything in order to see, then how can a form be seen by the collection of these three conditions, truly existent eye sensors, visual consciousness, and forms? Further, if the ear consciousness perceiving a voice travels out to hear the sound once it's already been spoken, then for what reason would that consciousness not have been the speaker that uttered the sound, since it was already aware it was spoken? On the other hand, if it in fact travels out to hear the sound when it had not yet been spoken, for what reason would it have arisen as an ear consciousness aimed at the sound as its object? If upon meeting the ear sensors a sound is cognitively taken, then by what is the first moment of the sound cognitively taken as an object before it meets the ear? And as sound does not come alone to the ear sensors, but, as you Vaisheshikas assert, comes as a quality truly conjoined with the nine kinds of basic things, how could it be completely taken selectively by itself, without the ear sensors also cognizing the other sense qualities also conjoined, like the smell? So long as a sound is not heard, it cannot be a sound for that interval. If what was indeed not a sound when it was not heard were to become a sound in the end when it was heard, this would be unreasonable, because then a smell as well as not a sound could also become a sound. Even if the mind, devoid of any cognitive sensors, were to travel to objects, how could it function to cognitively take them, since without eyes and so forth it would be like a blind man? Because of these faults like this, why wouldn't truly existent minds and living selves be forever without cognition? The mental factor that cognitively takes the uncommon characteristic mark of any object seen already, such as water, even in a mirage of water, that's called, within the scheme of all phenomena, the aggregate factor of distinguishing. Such a mental factor, having relied on eye sensors and a form, comes to arise even while being part of an illusion. But if something such as this factor of distinguishing existed with true existence, it would be unreasonable for it to be called part of an illusion. When there's nothing on earth that becomes no longer peculiar to learned ones after they've analyzed it with logic, then how can there be anything amazing about something like accurate, decisive apprehension of a non-truly existent sensory object by a non-truly existent sensory cognition? A circle of fire from a whirling firebrand, an emanation, a dream, an illusion, a moon in the water, a haze, an echo within a cave or a ravine, a mirage, and a cloud are thus all examples similar to what conventionally exists.